Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You know what I want.
Not Samson, Greg. Not Samson.
No, I want a top Samson.
Ah, 128 to 111. That is really bad. The Raptors have now lost 14 straight games. 14 straight. You lose the words at some point to diagnose, detail, talk about a team that just refuses to win. And maybe that's not even really on the table for them, but it's just like, this is bad basketball. It continues to be bad basketball. They got a semblance of the team back in IQ and RJ, and I think they both did a lot of good things on the offensive side of the floor. You know, 20 points for IQ, 6 assists. RJ has 28 and 6. They both shoot like 60% from the floor. These are good things, but the Raptors still get absolutely shellacked in this game. And truthfully, could it have been better if perhaps it wasn't, only 27 minutes, 26 minutes? Sure. But overall, we're looking at a team that just, they're losing some basketball games, man. 14 straight. This is the worst I've ever seen this team. I walked in, I said, wow, this is the worst I've ever seen this team. I mean, come on, man. Oh, the defense, that front court has no, they don't care about anything. And no shade to Kelly. This is not what he was asked. Actually, you know what? Kelly has had better defensive stints than this, certainly. It doesn't help that there is, when I look at it, as far as like, I'm looking to find a good defender in the starting lineup. And I know what Emmanuel Quickly was billed as, and I know that in the context of the Knicks, he was capable of doing some things. But even then, and Bruce Brown, past teams as well, I don't look at this starting lineup and say, we've got a defender there. I say, like, these guys would have to be sharing a single brain, knowing exactly where the stunt leaves, the recover begins, the hedge comes in. Like, it's, man, it's just, whew, bad. This is a bad team. Fred Benson says something about Drake that I'm not going to say right now. It's not that bad for audio listeners. It's just, I don't know what YouTube's policy is around those kind of things. And anyone for Blue Jays baseball or Leafs hockey, Samson? Yeah, I do. I was double screening. There's two screens. And I was watching some of the baseball. Unfortunately, the Blue Jays still can't hit. And, you know, the Blue Jays, they've got good pitching, you know, definitely. They're like the inverse of the Raptors. The Raptors can score the basketball. They figured out what they want to do for the most part. They opened up tons of driving lanes for RJ in this game. RJ got downhill. There's tons of stuff happening like that. And the Blue Jays are like the inverse. They've got a ton of good pitching, dominant pitching at times. It's just that lineup can't do anything. Where, although I guess like I don't pay much attention to the Leafs or anything like that, but Austin Matthews has, what, like 62 or 63 goals? That's a big deal. He might set the record in the salary cap era. Coco says, at least my sweater is cozy. It is very cozy. Thank you. And MJ Barrow says, hi, Samson. Good to see RJ and IQ back. The rest, LOL, it is what it is. It certainly is. Can I tell you something funny? My dad hates the saying, it is what it is. And I never understood it because I thought it was just a great way to sum up. You know, it's like c'est la vie. Or even, you know, my family's, you know, like, I don't know if it's a universal thing, but your family has like a family crest or whatever. The folk family thing is que sera sera, which is whatever will be, which is effectively, it is what it is. A bit of self-hatred from my father there. Yeah, these Raptors. Let's talk about RJ. RJ, glad to see him back. For most people who play basketball at this level, that level, it is an immense part of their life. It's like a huge part of their life. And so I imagine there's a semblance of normalcy. That return is really good for RJ, and I hope that the time away was like everything that he needed to be. Obviously, what happened in his life is not something he recovers from quickly or if ever, right? Just you find your new normal. He's probably like walking that line better now, being back with the Raptors. And he was awesome tonight. I think that he was just like very aggressive on the drive. And like those curved drives coming off of handoffs, 77 actions, which is the double drag screen, two screens, like a pick and roll above the break, all this kind of stuff. I think you look at it, you say, this is nice. This is a guy getting downhill. Cash a little triple, cash another one, work a little bit off ball. He fits in the offense really easily. Now, is he the salve on the back end? Is he the wing stopper the Raptors need? No, definitely not. But just seeing him go out there and get up 18 shots, 11 of 18 from the floor, 2 of 3 from downtown. The free throws are still maybe not hitting for him. But 6 boards, 6 assists. I thought that it was like that really professional approach that he's always been able to maintain. I thought that he was impressive in this game. And I'm almost like beyond critiquing singular players for how the defense is going, because like it's, get ready everybody, the feckless drop. But the defense is feckless. I don't know how they expect to muster it up. I don't know how they expect to like flip the switch on that end. At this point, it seems like that's a next season thing. They have like 8 games left to see as far as like, okay, are we building any type of, you know, are we building towards something? Are we developing stuff we're going to come in and do? Or, you know, I feel like that's probably like not spring training, but training camp in you know, September/October. That's what I would guess. The Raptors are just 14 games in a row bad. They were like 23 and what, like 37 or 38? They're now 23 and 52. I was asked a question when Scotty was still healthy, when BBQ was still a thing that was going on, like, do I think the Raptors could get to 30 wins? Egg on my face. I said yes. Actually, well, not really egg on my face. I think the team, if Scotty and they had been remotely healthy, Jakob as well, the Austrian barbecue, as it were, I think that they could have, but they just didn't. You know, everyone got injured. And now we're watching a team that they did get back, RJ and Quickly. But the thing here as well is that the Raptors were losing games when RJ and Quickly were there too. And the defense does not look any better. You know? Them's the breaks. I saw like people doing, you know, a reaction podcast to the Blue Jays game that where they got no hit. And I was like, damn, 8 minutes. And then I was like, you know what? Man, maybe I could do an 8 minute. You know? Matt Utley says, when are we going to start talking about March Madness more than the Raptors? You know what? I watched the games yesterday. And I saw a stat that the women's, you know, like Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese, LSU and Iowa, had a higher viewership than every MLB game last year, every college basketball game last year, every women's college basketball game ever, every ESPN college basketball game ever, every NBA game last year except for one, and I think it was every single college football game last year except for one. Jewel says 12 million somewhere. Matt Utley says 12 plus million. I thought it was like 12.3 million was what I saw. That's nuts, man. Those ladies pulled in everybody and they were hooping. Can't really say the same for the Raptors in this game. I imagine viewership is not probably not exactly what people, what maybe the powers that be want it to be right now. But you got to build a better team, and that team has to be healthy. We'll see what it is or what it's going to be. But there will be a live podcast on Saturday around noon for anybody who's just around and wants to watch that. Myself and Trey will be talking about draft stuff. We'll do some Raptor stuff, but we are going to start prepping prospects, etc. And also Josh might hop on that one. Going rock climbing with Josh soon. I'm excited for that. These Raptors... let's talk about Quickly a little bit. Quickly, I thought, really nice to see operating out of the pick and roll, getting downhill a little bit, and really, especially early on, getting to, getting to the three-point shot, looking for it very aggressively. Now, of course, the way that the Lakers were guarding it, they changed their coverages and they were a little bit more aggressive on ball, especially getting the big, in most cases, Anthony Davis, to step out onto these things and then switching across other actions, right? So more aggressive. Quickly, who is a fantastic shooter, but is a little bit slower on the pull, needs to create a little bit more space. He's a guy who you can definitely, you can lower some of the volume that he's providing there. So I'm really glad that he got to the point where, like, he opens the game, starts killing it. Keep that there so you can get the defensive response. You get more reps against these more aggressive defenses where you have to, you know, kind of stretch your legs as a playmaker, grow your game, all that kind of stuff. Manas Mishra says, L. We've got 14 of them, man. We need 13 more of them from you, brother. It's been a lot of that lately. Matt Utley says, what's your take on this? UConn NCAA men's coach said of Edie's potential in the NBA, quote, if there isn't a spot for Edie in the NBA, there's something wrong with the NBA, end quote. Would I agree? Yeah, I don't think like Edie is, I don't think Edie is like a lottery talent, but I have seen, especially like his fluidity guarding the pick and roll, how low he can get now. It's kind of night and day from where it was earlier in his Purdue career, as an earlier Boilermaker, as it were. And I think that he's improved his fluidity a lot. He's still such a beast. And I maybe I'm leaning too far on like the halcyon days of big men in the NBA, but I have a hard time believing that Zach Edey can't at least have 8 minutes of a game where he kind of changes the fabric of what the other team is trying to do. And he just has to, and it might not be immediately, but he just has to hang in on enough like pick and roll possessions so that he can provide what he needs to on offense, which is like an insane catch radius, a whole bunch of offensive rebounds, and a whole, like, he should be just like a really great guy to like vacuum up, you know, the basketball around the rim and finish things. And I think he could like dominate small pockets of the game eventually and survive them. Giovanni says the latest ESPN mock draft update has Edie at 14th in the first round. Yeah, I saw that. This take it with a grain of salt. I am not a self-professed, draft expert. I talk to scouts. I do my best, but they certainly know much more than me. But Edie, I don't know about lottery, but first round, yeah, sure, easy. I think he can hang in the NBA. I don't think he'll be one of those guys who there's a huge disparity between like, oh, he could be the best or he's not going to make it. I think that he has a reasonable floor and a reasonable ceiling. And the ceiling maybe isn't as high as some people think it is, but I don't think the floor is as low as some people think it is. I think he's an NBA player, an NBA center. And I know some people will be like, well, you can only play him against like Jokic or Embiid. I don't agree with that, like at all. I don't agree with that. I think that Edie, the goal is, of course, when you're from the coach's standpoint, from a roster building standpoint, you don't build a team of players who can survive matchups. You build a team of players who can hopefully dominate them. So with the Edie, on the flip side of it, it's like, think about how he could punish smaller players for points in time. Like, really, that's something that should be a part of his game. But I'm not sure about that. But yeah, we'll see. And Matt Utley brings up the reps with Team Canada have been huge. I really like, man, I think that's like, selfishly, as a guy who covers Team Canada every once in a while and watches a lot of it, I'm really hoping to be able to, while I'm in Vegas for Summer League, to watch the USA versus men's exhibition game, like to cover it as media. I think Edie has maybe a massive future, like completely dominating the FIBA paint for Canada. He could legitimize a front court that has been waiting for it. And he, if he really pops off in FIBA, this isn't even a Raptors thing. If he really pops off in FIBA, having him in the front court, having guys like RG on the wing, guys like Wiggins on the wing, provided that, you know, he's healthy and everything's going on there, and one of the best backcourts in the whole world, like Shea and Jamal, could be pretty good. Like, Canada could be one of those teams where you're like, damn, how the hell do we handle them? You know? So, yeah. Young Caramel says, do you think Darko has some philosophical opposition to tanking? Does it look like it's just going to be rotation experimenting from here on out? I don't think Darko has a, like, insofar as any coach does, I think Darko hates losing. I think coaches hate losing. I think players can really hate losing. I think end of bench players can kind of become like maybe apathetic or ambivalent to losing if they're, you know, if they're not able to, if they're not able to come in and impact the game regularly, it might just be like, well, I'm just on the bench sitting for a lot of this stuff. You know, I'm not sure. I couldn't say Darko's exact philosophical stance on tanking, but coaches don't like losing. It's tough to coach a team and watch them not win games, not perform, etc. So, and Richard Pilsky with the inverse view says Edie didn't play in the World Cup. Kelly O is a better fit for FIBA. I'm not so sure. It's like Kelly, definitely there's some FIBA shooting stuff, and Kelly has helmed the front court for many years, and like kudos to Kelly for doing that. But Edie, like, he didn't play in the World Cup because he's younger, and it's not as easy for him. But I'm saying, like, eventually, I'm not talking about the 2024 Olympics for what it's worth. I'm talking about, like, when I said in the future, like, Edie, I think, could be way better with Team Canada than, you know, Kelly might have ever been. And I do think Edie, you know, ideally the version of his game should translate to FIBA pretty well, if I had to guess. Because it's just like the way you can hang out in the paint, the smaller floor, the goaltending rules, I think that's kind of where I'm at. But yeah, definitely not 2024. That's Kelly. It would be pretty crazy to move away from him, even if he's not like the sexiest option, especially when you're going against like some of the heavy hitters across the world. But yeah. Micah Zion says no one ever got a second contract for losing. That's correct. Darko and the team, more than likely, if guys want to be on the team and if Darko wants to be the one coaching it, there is a turnover point where they start winning these games. You know, that's the approach they have to take. You can't plan on losing forever. I know, like, it became kind of fetishized, the idea of like tanking, losing. I even see people express that, you know, that opinion in chat or on Twitter or in like Raptors Republic comment sections or anything like that. But there the buck has to stop somewhere. There's a year where you stop losing. And usually it's not like a top-down decision made by the team. That's kind of like Houston, maybe. Houston is the inverse. They're the less likely road. They're like, we're sick of losing. We've been losing too long. Our players aren't learning important. Like, the intangibles are all screwed up. It's fucked. It's bad. We're going to sign some guys who are going to help us win games. And they're over 500 right now. The West is really, really strong. So they might be out of luck, but they're building something there. And they had to spend money to do it. But the most common situation after lots of losing is like what we see in OKC. You know, you have a guy like Shea who is just such a powerful motivator of winning, and you did a good job drafting around them. They haven't had to spend any money yet, but those are the guys who usually turn it around for you. And Scotty, you know, I don't know if Scotty's ceiling is around Shea's, because Shea will hang around the MVP conversation for what, like 8 years now. But Scotty, if he can get close to that, he's definitely a player. And I think he is a player who can kind of really, never by yourself, it's a team game, but help turn things around. And that's like, when you watch these games, as much as I've liked RJ's decision-making and how he's like applied himself as a Raptor, 28 points on like 6 assists, 6 boards is tremendous. You know, quickly giving you like 20 and 6 in short order is good, but these guys do not have the same level of impact as a Scotty to just kind of like come in, impact the ball on both sides, and also on top of that, provide, you know, like really affect the pacing of the game. Change how teams attack, change how teams defend, like a whole bunch. That's it's impressive to see RJ go for like 28 and 6 in these kind of loose games, and some of these games where it's a little bit, you know, the Raptors are getting blown out, especially that third quarter, man, where the Raptors just like they had no answer for Anthony Davis, and that was really the unfortunate thing. And LeBron, he took 12 shots. He made 83% from the field, finishing with 23-9. You know, D'Lo, he just got to orbit around the other guys, 25 points, 7 assists. Like, the Raptors had a tough time keeping up with anything. Yeah, that's kind of, it's kind of what happened with the Raptors. And yeah, RJ, I'm waiting to see when the Raptors are good, how RJ fits the team then, and also when teams kind of load up on him more often, what it looks like when he's, you know, watching or seeing a whole bunch of counters and what his response will be. Luca says, Houston has a ton of young talent on top of those vets they brought in. Really nice pieces there in different positions, more than what the Raptors have. I agree with that. Yeah, I do. I think that Houston, they have a bunch of guys I really like. And yeah, and then Richard Pilsky says the Raptors rebuild is just getting started. Give it 2-3 years. Yeah, the Raptors won a chip, spent draft capital, etc., to try and like keep things together. And, you know, which I think was made sense for the first couple years. And, you know, Jakob Poeltl, some people see that as an overspend. I think objectively it probably is, but he's an important member of the Raptors to maintain like a semblance of competitiveness for a guy to kind of help facilitate important possessions for the players. And the Raptors have to get more young talent on the team. We can see it each game. They need more. They need a higher, like higher potential. They need a higher ceiling. And that's even when the team is fully healthy. There needs to be more talent on the team. So they have a little bit of catching up to do with Houston. But Houston spent money. And I liked what Houston did in the offseason. And I liked that they went after Brook Lopez too. But I mean, there's teams that are in better spots than the Raptors. But what might happen with, you know, Houston was able to win without Şengün. The Raptors are not able to win without Scottie. I don't think that there's a, and I know Şengün has like, depending on how sexy you think the stats are, I'm not sure. But I think that Scottie is a player of more consequence than Şengün. And I think that Scottie is a guy who really, honestly, he is one of the, could be one of the defining players over the next however many years if things break the right way. And having a defining player is one of the easiest ways to turn things around. And defining players a lot, they don't just put up good stats, but they help elevate, you know, other levels of players to get the best out of them. And that's the hope of Scottie, is that he can be a force multiplier and all that kind of stuff. Speaking of a force multiplier, we'll talk about Grady a little bit. I think the cutting was still good. Missed a couple threes that I was like, ooh, maybe that should have dropped in, but they rimmed out. He was very adventurous, as he has been kind of operating in that mid-range and hunting those little pop shots. I like it. He made a crazy push shot over the backboard, like a horse type shot or pig type shot. Not the farm animals, but the games. And yeah, like there's fun stuff from Grady in every game. I think the defense right now, Grady's, it's like it hit a high point where he was doing a lot of things correctly. Some of that apathy might be catching up to him. Like he's stuck in the mixer with this team that is not good on defense. And, you know, there, it's kind of waxing and waning for him a little bit, you know, but Luka here says Grady is fun as hell. He really is. He does a ton of cool stuff every game, and he's going to lose minutes every game. The impact metrics hate him right now, but Luka and everybody in here, you know, you guys watch every game. You see that there's a future there for Grady and a good one. That's what I'm seeing as well. There's stuff that will improve, but when the team starts getting better, I think that's when Grady starts to become really, really valuable. He's asked to do a lot right now, and he's one of the youngest players in the NBA. He'll work on it. He'll come back from an offseason, a little bit of beef on there, you know, a little bit of muscle. He'll continue working. He'll get better at stuff. And I'm interested, really interested to see what year two looks like for Grady, and year three and year four, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Giovanni says, Samson, do you think the writing is on the wall for Gary Trent Jr. if he wants $20 million plus a year? Yeah, definitely. He's not getting $20 million plus a year. I've written about this a couple times, but it just, Gary's not getting 20 plus a year. No way. No team will pay him that much. If he doesn't sign for less than $20 million a year, he will be sitting when play resumes in October for the regular season. He'll take less than that. I don't know what the Raptors' hard out will be. I haven't asked or heard anything regarding that. I just heard that they were like far apart when they originally tried to bridge that gap. And that's kind of where we are, you know? I'm very interested to see how Wara and Gary kind of how that shakes out. If Gary stays, I think it's on a very friendly contract. If he goes, maybe he gets paid a little bit more than people think. Maybe there's a team that really thinks he fits what they want to do. Maybe he ends up being a guy who's like, I want to play some meaningful basketball. And he might even be like a mid-level exception guy, you know, like Dennis is probably a better player than Gary. I don't know if that sounds crazy to some people for me to say, but I do believe that generally. And he got the mid-level exception, which some people think is an overpay for Dennis. And then on top of that, you know, like, I don't know how much Gary is going to get paid. I don't want to count his pockets. I hope he gets as much as he wants. And I just hope, you know, people are happy with the contract on both sides that he ends up signing. Micah Zion says, wonder if he'd sign a 1 year for a good team and bet on himself. Yeah, that's the thing with Gary, like the defensive considerations and the fact that, like, you can't build out parts of the offense or hand him a bunch of possessions because you're not expecting any of that playmaking stuff to come from it. A lot of the bet on yourself players are players who not only could score the ball, but score the ball and playmake at a much higher level. Like even someone like Jordan Clarkson is just in a way different space, way different level as a playmaker than Gary is. So, and even not to mention like this year was a bet on himself. Like he took the player option. This was Gary's bet on himself year, and the Raptors, they couldn't really facilitate, and they weren't even a very good team, but not even a very good team couldn't facilitate that many shots for him. His shot attempts went way down, you know? And so who's going to make that bet with you? Because the team has to say yes, then the coach has to say yes, night in and night out. So I'm not sure. Lucas says, look how underpaid Monk has been with a few teams. I don't know if Gary is getting that money. Yeah, Monk had extenuating circumstances off the court that affected his market for sure. And also, I've wanted the Raptors to be on Monk for forever. I really love the way Malik Monk plays basketball. So it's not the best comp, but it is meaningful to say, like, there are better players who make less money, and that creates, like, a tough market for Gary. And also, like, teams have gotten pretty good at drafting that archetype, you know? I guess we'll see. But all the best to Gary. He didn't play tonight. He wasn't, you know, a factor in this game. But I think that he's been a very consistent player over the past handful of games. The Raptors are a team who have lost 14 in a row. And as they've been losing and as the team has been very injured, they have been looking to somebody night in and night out to absorb some of the volume that they need to, like, walk out a respectable team. And not respectable in, like, you win half your games, but respectable in, like, the other team feels like you're going to do something when you dribble the ball down the floor. And Gary provides a little bit of that pop. And also, I think he's been, like, a tremendous leader in the locker room. And I think he's a good mentor. And I think he's really well-liked. And any conversation I've had with Gary, I think he's been, really forthcoming and thoughtful. And also, he speaks very highly of the people around him, and he will not make trouble for anybody. He won't stir up any type of news in a bad way. He'll take whatever the team asks of him, he'll do, and he'll do it dutifully. And I think that's really, really important and commendable because, yeah, like, not everybody does that at their workplace. And even in a high-paying workplace, not everybody does that. But, yeah, Raptors. We talked about this game that we just saw played for like 12 minutes, 28 minutes in. Oh yeah, I forgot to ask at the highest concurrent viewers, but make sure to like the video. It actually helps the video. It's good. Subscribe if you want. I think we're still trying to chase down like 11,000 subscribers. I don't think we hit it by this season. Maybe I'll do some good stuff, some video content over the summer, and we'll see how that grows and all that kind of stuff. But it's tough to grow Raptors channels with the team being so bad. Like, who would want to tap into this? And thank you to everybody who is tapped in, but you know, I do appreciate so much. It's just JD Hunt says arrived late. Did I miss any dialectical materialism? Not yet. And Coco says not content. I thought I was saying it with like r/s, you know, sarcasm, rolling eyes, etc. Yeah. 30 minutes feels like good for the 14th loss in a row, right? We could probably leave it there. I hope that anybody who watched this game absorbed and enjoyed LeBron's presence in it, especially if anybody went to this one. I mean, it's cool to watch a guy who will be considered by at least a large swath of people to be the greatest to ever do it. I think like that's kind of where we're at. Yeah. Micah Zion says, oh, well, you got to get KSI on now that they're Raptor sponsors, but please don't. And yeah, I had commented about this. I was like, I saw people talking about the Prime sponsorship. And I was like, as somebody who watches some YouTube, as like guys in my age range do, I was like, Logan Paul, I'm well aware of his history of like scamming, being like more than a scoundrel, all this kind of stuff. And like very aware of like just he's been irreconcilably greedy and scummy. And like commit like crimes, like financial crimes, like and scams like young fans, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I was like, well, I don't like that. I know KSI has been involved in like controversy. He's been a creator for what, like 12 years or something. And every once in a while, like maybe something pops off, but I never saw anything meaningful. He seems funny to me, but I don't know. And Prime, I was like, well, is this good or bad? Seems kind of lame because of the Logan thing, but then also it's like you think about like ownership, you think about sponsorships that the Raptors take. I see like you watch like a baseball game or something and you see behind the like at the backstop you see like Lockheed Martin, you know, advertisements, and I'm like, ah, Prime is fine, like probably fine, right? RR says you bought this hat, for anybody who was wondering, the Frisco Rough Riders. This is a AA affiliate hat. Messaged me and asked like for the link. I'm glad to see you bought it. Maybe we'll take a picture together someday wearing them. And also asks, has anyone actually ever drank Prime? And I've never drank Prime. I have a friend who drank it and they said it tasted like the Rocket Pop or whatever, like the red, blue, white one from way back in the day. But I've never actually had it. So maybe it's good, maybe it isn't. A lot of people said it was not good. You know, Richard Pilsky says, get your bag, Raptors, as well as seeing LeBron is worth the price of admission this late in his career, certainly. You know, because you want to be able to tell your kids, like, I watched LeBron, you know? Nesta says, Samson, have you watched Idiocracy? They were far too accurate. Yeah, I love stuff that ages well. But then also you can see that, like, history kind of operates in cycles. And if you're well-read, and especially if you pay attention to like the news of the time, some of your predictions, they can be like well-informed predictions for the cycle of how things are going to go, especially as like late capitalism, etc. But I'm not going to get into that bag on this podcast. We're not doing that. Coco says, like the popsicle. Yes, the popsicle. So yeah, the Raptors, they have Logan Paul and KSI might be at a couple games wearing Raptors jerseys. That might be a thing. They need some celebrity juice now that Drake is like nowhere to be seen. I know S, when he was on the Raptors show, he said for Drake to respond. I guess for that would be fun. Anyway, you know, that's kind of where we're at, I think. Yeah, I feel like a podcast, everybody. The Raptors lose again. Be back here. Steven Liu says, Samson, do you think Zach Edey is a top 10 draft pick? I don't, but we talked about him for like 5 full minutes earlier in the podcast. So, you know, that's so I have considered it, but there's the linear aspect for, you know, the audio listeners. I know like this is kind of like a Twitch stream in that, you know, it's like me responding and talking to people, but also it's not a Twitch stream in that it goes up on, you know, like Spotify afterwards, and that's where most people listen to it, so who knows. DM says, how possible is it to fairly evaluate the Raptors head coach after his first season, given all the things that have happened with the roster this year? Okay, this will be the last thing I answer. And it's something I thought about because I have been pro Darko this season relative to the fan base, I think, and certainly relative to maybe like pundits or maybe, you know, people who are critical of the team. Because I've been very critical of the team, but I still feel quite good about Darko's presence as head coach. First things first. Players can't hate the coach. Players have to be able to go to work repeatedly and like the coach. And the coach also has to be able to align with the goals of development on the team. Now, the Raptors will be a better team for development when they have players who have conceivably higher potentials and ceilings that you can aim for. Having like a bunch of like 10-day/2-way guys who are around like 25, 26, who, you know, they've been trying to do a whole bunch of stuff, like, yeah. It makes it a little bit tougher to like lean on, you know, development. But as Coco here says, soft skills matter. They certainly do. And on top of that, you know, I think that he has completely changed the fabric of the offense. Now, the offense isn't blowing anybody away. The defense has been really bad. But here's the thing. I think that the defense can get better. I think that it will get better with better personnel. What I like about the change of the offense, switching from more of a pick and roll slash flatten out slash ISO team, is that it is a very easy system for somebody to come into. And it's a system that with all of the cutting and passing and motion can get more out of, let's say, mediocre players or mid-tier players, especially if they play within scheme. That's what the important thing is. So the Raptors will be like a more scalable offense in regular seasons of the future, and they won't rely on as much heroism from guys to like create all the time. And so that's what it's going to be. That's what I think is the most important thing. They pass the hell out of the ball. They cut a lot. They screen a lot. There is buy-in across the whole thing. And Scotty also fits into it well. And Scotty, I think, in the most idealized version of this team and the idealized version of Scotty, I think, go hand in glove. That's where I think it's most important that Darko, you know, that he be like, you know, I don't want to like give him too many pats on the back because the team isn't good. And while some of that's not his fault, it's like you wonder if maybe if there's room for this team to be better coached. There's always room to like improve rotations. There's room to improve, you know, what you're doing game planning defensively. So I don't want to say like Darko's knocking it out of the park, but I do think that like there are some people who do like hashtag fire Darko, all that kind of stuff. I can't get there at all. I think that he certainly coached the team and changed enough things to justify seeing like a good amount more of him. And then you see if you can make meaningful steps next year when hopefully you have a healthier team and a much clearer identity, because he's had to coach like four separate types of teams this season. And how can you expect consistency of the team when from an injury and roster building standpoint, that just like wasn't afforded to anybody? The longest stretch of games they got was maybe like 26 or 27 before things started getting blown up. So that's what it is. Nameless says, the first year for Darko is just to establish the culture, not win. I agree with that. You know, JD Hunt says, I'm worried that if mid-talent players are a great value of our system, we'll end up with a roster with too many mid-level and we'll be tied to the system. No, I don't mean it in that way. I mean to say, like, if there's a mid-tier player, like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is like a really good example of that. He can really thrive in Denver and he could really thrive around like LeBron and AD as well. And he's really elevated in those spots because those players and those systems can make things really easy for him to shine. And so a mid-level player becomes like that much better. Aaron Gordon is another guy who maybe not mid-level is a guy who is definitely more than mid-level, but is a guy who was much better in this system. And that means like your players are just better. And also, I don't mean to say that like this system is only designed for mid-tier players. You can always just flatten it out. 1-4 flat, 1-5 flat. You can run the pick and roll if you have the players to do it. You can always get to that spot. That's kind of where it's at, right? You can always go to that. The system being like one that includes like more cutting, more motion, and your automatics are a little bit more team involved. That makes way more sense to me, especially if like you have enough talent to sustain that and you don't have to like flatten out into an ISO to survive every game like the Raptors had to do for a couple years. You know, it's the front office, they need to get way better players, of course, to get to the to climb the mountaintop. But on top of that, I think that the scheme that they've put into the offense means that they will get more out of lower end and mid-tier players in the future, which will lighten the load on the better players, especially during the slog of the regular season. And then, you know, in the playoffs, it's mostly about talent. So that's kind of my expectation and hope and all that kind of stuff. Nameless said, I've got it all twisted, flipped, and backwards as far as like Darko and the winning thing. I think, I don't know if I haven't, you know, expressed myself properly or the way I intend, but I think you and I see it very similarly, Nameless, if I just had to guess. But honestly, people pop into these things halfway through, and I am talking to everybody at once and treating it like they've been listening the whole time, which the audio listeners have been, which you have been. If anybody, before we get out of here, you want to like the video, subscribe, all that good stuff, please feel free. Helps the website, helps the YouTube channel, helps me through some form or fashion, I suppose. And that's the podcast, probably. Raptors lose 14 straight. We'll sign off with this from MSJ. We are in tank mode. That's the take here. We certainly are. Thank you for tuning in, and whether you got into this in the morning or at night, have a blessed day, and goodbye.